Following is a one-minute introduction, which will be followed by the treatment. This is a one-minute introduction to the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, the related website, and methods of communication. The website is mbeinstitute.org. To find out about the founding of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, which was founded in 1988 by William and Helen Wright, please navigate to the menu, which is in the top left corner of every page, and select About, which is near the bottom of the menu. If you would like to contact us in a private, secure manner, please send a message which is obtained from clicking on the Contact button, which is next to the About selection at the bottom area of the menu. This is the end of the introduction. The extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute follows. A longtime friend who was an excellent Christian Science practitioner stated, "All is qualities." It appears she used the verb in singular because everything is unified, and the only thing that exists is the unified network of qualities. Mary Baker Eddy uses that same grammar on page 146, where she states, "Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease." And she continues that on page 330 of the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. "When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated." And the next pages, 11 pages up through 340, are the individual 32 planks that are enumerated in full statement. In both page 146 and 330, she uses the singular as a verb. Divine metaphysics is now reduced, and when the 32 planks of the platform is understood. So if we're looking to make a statement where a plural is unified as one unit, that would be the proper grammar. What does the title refer to? Progress, Ideas of God Omnipresent. Mary Baker Eddy makes the statement that infinite progression is concrete being. Certainly, if we're looking for progress, we want it to be based on something that is permanent. And of course, concrete being symbolizes permanence. For one, it is referring to the infinitude of being, not some finite, confined definition to a personality, but the infinitude of infinite divine qualities of God. If one is involved in a project and there seems to be a stalemate or a delay or a dilution or a deflection or even a stoppage or a reversal, the concept that everything that exists, the only thing that exists is qualities. And also, if we accept the statement in the glossary under the definition of good, Mary Baker Eddy defines it as God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. She further defines omniscience as omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, and omni-knowing. Since God knows all and is the only intelligence, for omni means one, only, and all, and also the only wisdom, then God, in his infinite mind, could not include any mistake. God is truth. The definition of God on page 465 states that God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. She further states in the textbook that love means wholeness, completeness, nothing lacking. That could be connected to the fact that all is qualities. Now, the qualities bring forth ideas, and ideas are what the universe is filled with, individual ideas that are useful for everything imaginable, that is good, that is whole, that is perfect, that is spiritual, that can be identified through spiritual senses, and always the substance of spirit, and it is a principled idea. Every idea is principled. It is structured with the system of divine metaphysics. And every idea is alive. Nothing is passive. It is vivacious. There is no error in its structure. There is no error in its action, for it is truth. And if you put those together, you will find that that is a statement of all seven synonymous terms. Everything relates to the seven synonymous terms, because that defines God, and God is omnipresent, which means there is nothing but God. Also on 587, along with the definition of good, she gives us a slightly different definition of God with an emphasis on a few different qualities. She states that God is the great I Am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. There is no conflict at all between anything Mary Baker Eddy says if we understand enough about the system of divine metaphysics to realize the components that are involved. Mathematics includes the 10 digits of 0 through 9, the operators, which are add, subtract, multiply, and divide, that's the basic ones, and there's a multitude of levels of consciousness with mathematics. The add, subtract, multiply, and division is the basic level. In the system of divine metaphysics, there are the seven synonymous terms, of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And there are also four operators in the system of divine metaphysics. These are enumerated in the book of Revelation in the Bible. They are the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. There are various levels of consciousness in mathematics, and the same is true in the system of divine metaphysics. These levels are outlined on pages 115 and 116 of the textbook. Three of them are mortal mind levels, and one of them is immortal mind. Which define those levels is reproduced and available on the website, mbeinstitute.org. One might think that there are some conflicts in the textbook, but they're only an appearance of a conflict if one does not understand other facets of the system of divine metaphysics. For example, the levels. If you look at the lower level, which is depravity, they include terms which are the lowest level of thinking, which of course includes all forms of sin, disease, sickness, and death. Other places in the textbook, she says there is no sin, disease, sickness, or death. That's because she's referring to a higher level of consciousness. An affirmative statement about God could not include something that is unlike God. But if one is describing the appearance of evil in one's thought, then that is totally unlike God. And when we understand enough about the system of divine metaphysics to know that there is no reality in the lower forms of thinking, just like the title of this treatment indicates, in which progress is rising above the lower levels of thought. And when we realize that the universe is filled with the ideas of God, which means that those ideas are omnipresent, then we realize that there cannot also be lower ideas of God which are real. Mary Baker Eddy has designated 26 topics in her weekly Bible lesson, and one of those is labeled unreality. So that is a discussion of the lower levels of thinking, or rather, the lack of spiritual thinking. And reality is the opposite. That is a focus on what is real. In other words, it is a focus on spirit instead of matter, on immortal mind instead of mortal mind, on spiritual senses instead of material senses, on principle that is of the substance of spirit instead of one that is a substance of self-will or matter. The same with life. Not a material sense of life, but a spiritual sense of life. And a concept of truth, which is purity, without error or mistakes, instead of a false sense of truth. And the same with love. Not a sensual, sinful love, but one that is based on the ideas of God, an expression of the spirituality of true love, the kind of love which comprises God, which is wholeness and completeness and perfect in every way. The lasting, the only kind of eternal love is the love that is of the substance of spirit. If one would think about what was the most predominant, obvious quality that was expressed by both Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy, it seems that it would be love, for they were both constantly attacked by everyone, whether they were considered to be friends or enemies. And yet their response was always love. When the soldiers came to arrest Jesus, to take him to trial, to see if he would be crucified, Peter cut off the ear of one of the soldiers. But what was the response of love as manifested by Jesus? He healed the ear. He said, "Put up thy sword, Peter." In other words, we do not challenge mortal mind on the level of mortal mind. When Jesus was tempted by the belief of a devil after coming out of the 40 days and nights in the desert before he started his ministry, he did not answer the devil with a material sense of facts, because anything relating to a material sense of things is mortal and not spiritual. It is based on a sense of matter as substance, not spirit, which is pure, flawless, transparent, and reflective. So he would quote a statement from the Bible that would be a direct refutation of what the devil was trying to propose as a temptation to get involved in a material sense and utilize personality instead of spirituality. If we have our thought open to spirit, we will have the ideas of God that will be coming to us automatically when we need them. And by need them, I mean to refute any suggestion that is based on something less than the perfection of God. Mary Baker Eddy prophesied that if Christian Scientists did not do their work, civilization would be facing the longest, most intense duration of a dark age period that humanity had ever experienced. We have been facing that for quite some time now. Obviously, Christian Scientists were not doing their work. When Mary Baker Eddy was here, Christian Science was vibrant. Vibrant. There were churches and practitioners and teachers all over the world. And what do we have now? Instead of 40 or 50 churches in some of the larger cities, we would be lucky to find two or three, and those likely would not be very well attended. What happened? Many things failed to happen. Number one, a discovery and the discoverer cannot be separated. The first thing that took place when Mary Baker Eddy passed on was that her picture was removed from the textbook. Other things that have happened, monuments that were in her honor spread throughout the New England states of America were destroyed. A pyramid that was produced to exactly replicate the Big Pyramid of Giza that is filled with prophecies was destroyed. And they were so afraid of the truth and that she was prophesied in that pyramid that they blew it up, and buried the pieces in multiple locations that was kept secret from the public. They didn't want anyone finding those bits of pieces and somehow putting it together. The ones who lived with her and any of her students were forbid to even talk about her or write about her. Imagine, some of those lived in her home for over a decade, and they were forbid to even write about their experiences with her, which could have been extremely valuable. The manual has very specific provisions in it which delineate what is to happen when she passed on. What do I mean by that? There are provisions in there, the important ones, that control the operation of the Mother Church, which states that she must individually and personally approve and sign the carrying on of various activities. There was no legal way to continue in perpetuity the appointment of teachers or practitioners or even membership to be signed. The Boston Church was designed to be for the ones living in Boston as a branch church, not a church to control all of the churches throughout the world. The purpose of the Publishing Society was to promote Mary Baker Eddy's writings. They've done a very poor job, starting to alter the very textbook that was her flagship. Healing was a very integral part of Christian Science. And what is it now? People that call themselves Christian Science don't even focus on it. They don't look at it as a way of life. Now, I'm not saying every single individual, but this is the theme that is followed, is what I stated. And therefore, healing is not particularly thought of as an integral part of Christian Science. Yet that is what separated Christian Science from all other religions. It was the first restoration of healing since the time of Christ Jesus, and particularly the time up until 325, when there was a meeting of the Council of Nicaea. And at that meeting, which was a meeting between governments and churches in Europe, they decided that they would name Jesus as God. Wherein the Bible states, even in the King James Version, that Jesus said he was not God. When a Pharisee inquired of Jesus, he addressed him as good master. And Jesus immediately refuted it, and he said, why call thou me good? There is only one good, and that is God. There are a number of places throughout the Bible which align with this same line of thinking. He is the Son of God. He is not God. Can you really believe that God would be birthed by a human mother? Is there any power that could bring injury and death to God? Is it possible that God, which is omnipresent, omnipotent, and omni-knowing, omni-action, omni-intelligence, and yet be composed of blood, bones, and other material elements? no thinking person could actually accept that kind of an understanding, or should I say lack of understanding, about what a real God could be, the one and only God. How could a physical body be omnipresent? And yet the Bible states that God is omnipresent. A cross is a common piece of jewelry for those to wear that call themselves Christians. And in churches, they show a man hanging from a cross, often with a crown of thorns on his head. This was done purposely so people would think of God as being dead. There is rarely an emphasis on the resurrection or the ascension. Tremendous amount of influence and attention given to the crucifixion. What would have the power to crucify an omnipotent God? God is the only power. The ideas of God, which are omnipresent, which really enables one to work on the path of infinite progression, striving for concrete being, could not be composed of matter or mortality, could not be composed of blood, bones, or other material elements. Our thought has to be on spirit, immortal mind, spiritual qualities, truth, not error, divine principle, not chaos, eternal life, spiritual life, not a material sense of life, love that is composed of spirit, not matter. What is the one thing more important than anything else if one is working on spiritual growth for themselves or assisting someone else? What did Jesus represent? What is the first story that is referred to in the chapter on Christian Science Practice? Mary Baker Eddy wrote an article, Love Your Enemies. Love is the most important term when thinking about anything of permanence, because love represents wholeness. It includes all of the other qualities. And if one is going to cultivate their motherhood characteristics, which every male needs to do, just as every female needs to cultivate their male characteristics, and by male characteristics, I'm thinking of things such as courage and strength. And by female characteristics, I refer to things such as nurturing, mothering, bringing things to fulfillment, such as a newborn baby. You don't leave it to its own devices, but you nurture it to bring it to maturity. And if you do it with love and in a spiritual way, it will have a life that is much different than if it didn't have that kind of a nurturing. If a man is married, what kind of qualities should he be expressing when he's relating to his wife? Should he be a he-man? Like someone in a boxing match, punching someone in the face, or should he be tender and loving and kind? Those are female qualities. In other words, to be complete, we have to be exercising and manifesting the qualities of both what is attributed normally to a male and a female. If you are running a business and you have a problem in a particular department, don't you want to solve that problem? Don't you want to nurture it? Bring it to fulfillment? That's a motherly quality. Nurturing. Think of yourself being a gardener. What do you want to do with all the thoughts in your consciousness? You want to nurture them. You want to bring them to the beauty and fulfillment as if you were tending to a flower garden or a vegetable garden or a garden of trees, fruit trees, or shade trees. Anything that is in the pattern of growth, you want to bring it to fulfillment. You want to have the proper soil. You want to have the proper aeration within the soil. You give it the proper amount of water. You keep it trimmed. Everything in life is based on nurturing what needs to be nurtured to bring it to fulfillment. It doesn't matter whether it's a relationship or whether it's a business, whether it's an invention. Anything and everything requires the qualities of both those that are normally attributed to female as well as male and child. Think of the qualities of a child. Jesus loved children because they were innocent. And they were receptive. They were responsive. They weren't carrying around a truckload of preconceived biases which they learned from a material sense of life, truth, and intelligence in matter. You might say that an innocent child is as pure as a fresh fallen snow. If there is a threat of war, how could this topic of progress, ideas of God omnipresent, be utilized? Would it not be a good idea to think of everyone involved as being an idea of God and therefore are reflecting the qualities of God, the spiritual qualities of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love? War is basically for the purpose of someone desiring something that does not belong to them. Right now, the war against Russia has been openly stated by the ones that are trying to take over Russia, of stating that Russia is the largest continent on planet Earth and it has the most natural resources. It's almost double number two, which is the United States. And they just want to have it for free. So they're going to have war with Russia to try to get it for nothing. Russia doesn't want to sell. They don't want to rent. They don't want a loan. They want it to be their motherland, which has been their motherland, along with a lot of things that were already taken away from them. And there's no one else that has any right to it. You want to have the benefit of what Russia has? You prefer what they have to offer over what your country does, wherever you're living, and whatever your nationality is and citizenship. Give it up. Go to Russia. Be a citizen of Russia. If they will accept you. They don't have open borders like America has had for the last 4 years, up until January of 2025. In fact, there is probably a very small percentage of countries in the world that has open borders. Almost all of them have walls that delineate where their boundaries are. But no, America's different. Come one and come all. And the more criminal you are, the better we like it. That's exactly has been the attitude of the government of the United States from January 2021 to January 2025. The very individuals that said that they wanted to have control of anyone that comes into our country are the ones that absolutely made a diametric change because they have a different agenda. They want to control America. They want to control everyone. They want to take all rights away from everyone in the country, except themselves. A few elites want to control everyone else. Is that the way to act if you believe in the golden rule? Are you doing unto others as you would have others do unto you? I don't think so. If we want to have infinite progression and strive for concrete being, then we've got to be on the path of spirit, not matter. On the path of earning what we benefit, not stealing it. If you want to have a life of healing, a life of spiritual progress, the first thing you have to realize is that you have to live a life of giving. 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 Not taking, taking, and taking some more. If you don't live a life of giving in everything you do, you will never be successful in having a life of joy and progress. Because that's the very first requirement, is to live a life of love. Live a life of giving. Do you even give a smile when you're walking among the crowd? Or are you so concerned about your own affairs that you don't think about anyone else around you? Do you say thank you every time someone does something for you? Let's say you're shopping and you're talking about a clerk. Do you really genuinely from your heart express a warm sense of gratitude? Imagine you were the clerk and you dealt with a large number of people throughout the day. Do you think your life would be more enjoyable if everyone appreciated what you did? If you did nothing more than just check them out, take their payment, and give them their item that they're buying or their items, which would be more pleasant for you? That's the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Have you ever been shopping and seen someone that was in need? Maybe someone in a wheelchair? Maybe someone struggling to pick up something that was heavy? Maybe they rushed through the store thinking they were going to pick up one thing, and they saw several more things that they needed, so they were holding all of these things in their arms, and they could hardly hold them without dropping some of them. Have you seen that? An offer to help? I have. Has anyone ever asked you for money? Begging? Did you ever ask them what they really needed? What they were going to use the money for? Why they were in that position that they had no money for whatever it is they needed? It could have been food, shelter, clothing. It could be anything. It could be gas for their car. It could be replacing a tire that went flat and it's up on the freeway or it's down the street. Do you care enough about others to find out what their problem is instead of just doing the easy thing and flipping them some coins or even paper money? It's very easy for most people to give money to someone that is begging. You almost feel like it's your obligation. But is that our only sense of it? How about an accident? When you see an accident, what do you do about it? If you're in a building and you find that it's on fire, what do you do about it? We should take the human steps to solve the problem, and while we're doing it, we need to be taking the divine steps and declaring the truth about reality that applies to the particular situation. The ideas of God, right out of the title of this treatment, is that they are omnipresent. And not only that, that progress depends upon utilizing the ideas of God and knowing that they're omnipresent and letting them lead us into our every thought, speech, and action. Christ Jesus stated that thinking about something is the same as doing it. Have you ever thought a single evil thought about anything or anyone? If you're a man, have you ever had a thought of lust when you saw a beautiful woman walking down the street? Mary Baker Eddy says, do not enter into an atmosphere of evil unless in an attempt to purify it. Have we tried to purify every evil thought that has come to us? Do we have a lot of them stored up in our closet along with other skeletons? Someone in need, do we really talk to them and see why they are in need and how can we be of service? I know of a man that came out of a department store and someone walked up to him as he was approaching his car. And he asked for money. And the guy looked at him. He looked okay. He didn't look like he was living on the street. And so he asked him, may I ask, why do you need money? He says, I no longer have a job. I haven't eaten in 2 days. I don't even have money to put gas in my motorcycle to go look for another job. He had no money for telephone time on his cell phone to call anybody. He came to the conclusion the only thing he could do is go and beg for money. So the man asked him, well, what do you do for a living? He said, I'm a handyman. He said, what do you know how to do? He said, everything. Electrical, plumbing, carpentry. I love to fix things. I'm very creative. The man had been accumulating a list of repairs for his home for several months. He said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you enough money for gas. I'll go with you and get it at the gas station. He had told him that he just lived a few blocks away when he asked him where he lived. And so they went over to where his vehicle was. And he said he had just enough to get to a gas station. So they went there, and sure enough, the tank was empty. So he filled it up for him, and then he had him follow him up to his house, and he showed him the list of repairs. He said, I can do everything on this list. So he said, I'll tell you what, we'll take it a day at a time. You come tomorrow morning. And they set up a time, and we'll take it a day at a time. He worked for him for 3 months. Both of them were happy. The one was happy to have his things fixed, and it was at a reasonable price. The other one was very happy to have the money so he could get back on his feet. And the very day that he was done with the last thing on the list, the man that was in need told him, he said, you know, I found a job yesterday after I left here. And they said I could start working as soon as I finished. So he transitioned into a full-time job. Only because the man took an interest in what his problem was instead of giving him just enough money to eat. There's another situation where a man came out of a store and there was a woman, young girl, maybe in her 20s, that was in a wheelchair and her mother was sitting beside of her and the young lady in the wheelchair had no control on her body whatsoever. Very sad looking situation. The man gave them some money, and after he did and he left on his way home, he was thinking, now how can I really help them? What can I do to make a difference in their life? He decided he would print out Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures up through the end of chapter 1, which would include the introductory quotes and the preface, table of contents, and chapter 1, which was on prayer. And he had that done at an office supply store. And when they did it, they put it into a spiral binder that made it very easy to turn the pages. And also it protected, you know, the whole compilation. So he took it to them, and they were there, same place, outside the door. And you wouldn't believe the smile that was on the face of the mother. The daughter didn't know what was happening because she had, to belief, no control of her bodily functions and so forth. But the mother was so grateful and didn't even know what it was about, except he said that this may be of help to you. And she was so grateful that someone cared to not just give them money, but to care about helping them solve their problem. And he frequents the store a couple of times a month, and it's been 2 or 3 months, and every time he is there, she has that out, and she's reading it. It's on her lap, and she's reading it. And he found some other ways that he could help them. They were in the sun, and so anyway, he made provision to make them more comfortable. Do we take the time and do we really express the love to find out what a problem is and to see if we can help solve it? Mary Baker Eddy had a student visit her in her early days. She let them come and visit her where they could ask her questions to see how they could make better progress on a healing that they might be working on or whatever. She asked one of them the very same thing that was just mentioned in this treatment. What do you see if you see someone in need and when you're out in public? Stray dog. Someone that you can tell is in need. It could be someone that looks homeless. Someone in a wheelchair. Whatever the situation might be, what do you do about it? How about an accident? You happen to observe an accident when it's taking place. What do you do about it? The individual didn't know what to say. They couldn't understand why she was even asking them that kind of a question. So giving them a little time to think, and there was no response, she said, "Are you a Christian Scientist?" Then they realized what they should have been doing, but they were not. So the individual told Mary Baker Eddy, "No, Mrs. Eddy, I am not a Christian Scientist." It was a wake-up call. They knew what they should be doing, but they weren't doing it. They knew the ideas of God were omnipresent, that they could utilize those ideas of God to help someone else make progress, and that they could be making progress in their own consciousness by seeing the nothingness of whatever the problem is and affirming the truth about it. Imagine if everyone that observed an accident or observed a stray dog or observed someone in a wheelchair would do that kind of thinking. What do you think would be the result? It would be very effective. That's what it would do. It would be very effective. And if you had everyone doing that kind of thinking, it would solve the problem. If everyone that knew about a war that was going on would apply the right kind of God's ideas to it, the war would be over. The ones that were trying to get something for nothing would forget all about it and maybe become more industrious and try to build something themselves instead of trying to steal from someone else that had something that they wanted. There is enough supply for everyone for whatever the need is. Do we really think we're going to get ahead by stealing it from someone else? Even in Western movies where you have the good guys and the bad guys, the ones that are robbing a bank or a train, they always run out of money. They never have any money. And they always fight about the money. Do we want to transform our own consciousness so that we can be a benefit to humanity and reflect that out into the universe of spiritual thought? Or do we want to be passive and just let evil grow unattended? Edmund Burke, 200 years ago, said, "Evil triumphs when good men do nothing." Is that the kind of good man we want to be, or good woman? I've seen children do things that are helpful for others. What kind of an individual are we going to be? What kind are we now? What kind would we like to be after we wake up? Are we going to wake up? Do we see any benefit in waking up? If we were in front of Mary Baker Eddy, would we have to say, "No, Mrs. Eddy, I am not a Christian Scientist"? Is that what we want to give as a reply? I saw something the other day that said, the only thing you can take with you when you pass on is what you have given away. Chew on that for a while. Contemplate. How much have you given away? The Bible says we should tithe. That means a tenth part. A tenth part of what? If we've got $1 million in the bank, does that mean we should give away $100,000? If we've got $100, does that mean we should give away 10? If we've got $1, does that mean we should give away 10 cents? What does it mean? When we start our day, we have 1,440 minutes until the next day starts, according to the clock. How much of that time do we devote to being on the infinite path of progression, working toward concrete being? How much of that time do we devote to seeing if we can help other people, other individuals that are in need? How much of that time do we devote to getting our own thought in line with God, with the infinite, incorporeal, divine and supreme mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love? The great I am, the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving and eternal God, the one that is principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, and love, all substance and intelligence. The God that is spirit, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and omniaction. How much of that time do we devote to trying to understand better what man is as the compound idea of infinite spirit? How about to try to understand what the real meaning of church is? Church is that institution which affords proof of its utility. Can we have church within our own consciousness? Or do we have to go to a building? Do we want to afford proof of our own utility? Are we going to do good things? Mary Baker Eddy says the good we do and embody is the only power obtainable. Do we want to be a powerful individual? All we have to do is reflect the goodness of God. Doing good things for all humanity. Mary Baker Eddy prayed every hour of her waking day to make sure every hour, if she was up 18 hours a day, you know, we're talking 18 prayers. 18 times she did this. And she probably was up 18 hours. A lot of people were up for 18 hours. Every hour. She prayed to make sure that she was not thinking anything but good about everyone else. Every event, every relationship, with everyone attacking her, she was guarding her own thought to make sure that she was responding with love. She prayed 3 times a day for all humanity, specifically. 3 times. She used to take a daily ride in the area where she lived. It was in Concord, New Hampshire, for 16 years, and then it was in Boston on the Back Bay. The final few years of her life on earth in visible form as a human. What do you think she was doing when she would take these rides around the area? You think she was just looking to see and smell the flowers? Or do you think she was absorbing all of the atmosphere to see how she could improve it? She paid to have one of the streets paved in the city of Concord. Monaco doesn't have any taxes. And if you've ever been there, it's a beautiful place. Everything is perfectly groomed. No taxes. The people that live there pay for what is needed. They don't have to tax people. The people who live there want to have it perfect, and so they pay for it themselves. There's nothing in the Constitution that says that Congress or anybody else has the right to tax the people. In fact, the Constitution says there shall be no taxation without representation. That means the people have to have a representative that is expressing their thoughts before they can tax them. progress. Infinite progression is concrete being. Concrete. Ideas of God are omnipresent. Are we letting those ideas of God flow into our consciousness? This prayer treatment is totally extemporaneous. The thought came to me about some things I'm aware of where the progress is not taking place the way it should. And so the thought came to me that there is no idea that is out of place. There is no idea that is inactive. Everything about God is expressing life. God's ideas are omnipresent. They're everywhere. No matter where we are or what the circumstance is, they're available to us individually to meet our particular need and to give us a way that we can benefit all humanity. Are we opening up our thought? One of the popular pictures of Christ Jesus is an image of him standing at a door knocking on it. The thought that comes to me is that he's knocking on our door of consciousness. Are we going to open it? Are we going to let the Christ thought come in? Or are we preserving it to let evil thoughts come in? Do we want to let the thoughts of hate or problems, past, present, or what we think will happen in the future, be occupying our thought? Dale Carnegie was an individual that devoted a lot of years to coaching people on how to become successful. He had a very high opinion of Mary Baker Eddy. And he was in the era when Mary Baker Eddy was active, 125 years ago. He said, never make a strong opposing opinion to someone about what their opinion is. He says, tomorrow you may be better informed about it and agree with them. Christ Jesus says, don't talk much. Use the words yes and no. Yea, yea, nay, nay. He didn't talk strong to anyone. He talked strong to evil, cutting off the ear of the soldier. He said, put up thy sword, Peter. He didn't talk evil about Judas. He knew what he was going to do. And he discussed it with his disciples. He knew Peter was going to betray him. He did not attack individual personalities. He only attacked the evil, the money changers at the synagogue. He overthrew their tables because they were a symbol of evil. They were trying to make a profit off of those who were going to the synagogue to have a taste of what God was all about. And that was a symbol of how they could do it. The lady that gave one mite as a donation, Jesus said that she gave more than everyone else because she gave everything she had. If you do a little research, you'll find that a mite equaled approximately one penny. Actually, I think she gave two mites, and the two mites were equal to one penny. What are we giving? We could certainly give time. We probably have some money. Maybe we have a lot of money. Maybe we are the wealthiest man in the world. What talents do we have that we can share? Can we teach someone else something that we know how to do that would benefit them? Do we have food, shelter, and clothing? Transportation? Can we share it? Do we have extra? Are we keeping our home in order and clean? We could give away things we don't need, and the best thing is to give away something that we need. Give away the best that we have, not the worst. That's a greater sense of love. Buy new things and give them away, instead of giving things away that are worn out. Is someone in need of companionship? Could we spend some time with them? Maybe they would like to have a dog or a cat as a pet. Could we find a great one and give it to them? God's ideas are abundant. If we really want to live a life of giving, thoughts will come to us that will reveal ways that we haven't thought of before. If we have a desire, the laws of God provide balance. That's what divine principle is all about. Balance. Love is the lubricant that makes everything work together smoothly. If we're having a problem with something, are we loving every aspect of it? Are we nurturing what is deficient? If you are lacking something, give. Because your lack is only an expression that you're fearing that you don't have something you need. So give away something you need. Force yourself. I say, fake it until you make it. If you don't understand something spiritually, then act like you do. If you lack confidence, read chapter 18, which is the chapter on fruitage. There's 85 different individuals that have contributed 486 different healings. So each one was averaging, around 6 apiece. They were maybe looking for a healing in one thing and everything in their life. was fixed up. They weren't even thinking about it. But their purification of thought that was required for them to have the fruition of the thing they were working on brought about everything else in their life. If someone is healed by the benefit of the efforts of a practitioner, Christian Science practitioner, they're not going to advance if they just leave it at that. Because that should be an introduction to a desire to transform everything about your life. When we have a problem, it's only showing that there's a deficiency in some way we're thinking or we're being subjected to passively by universal belief. But we can change it. I was sitting next to an elderly lady. Well, at the time, I thought she was elderly. She was at least double my age, maybe three times on a human calendar. And I noticed that she wasn't wearing glasses. And she was holding the hymnal at the regular distance as if she had 20/20 vision. And when the service was over, I turned to her. I was sitting right next to her, and I said, "It's beautiful that you do not have a need for glasses and you can read all the words in the hymnal." What do you think her response was? She said, "I keep after it." She doesn't just let the time pass and see the years roll up on the clock or on the calendar. She keeps after it. She is protecting her thought on a regular basis that there is no age and there is no deterioration of sight or any other faculty probably. And as a result, she preserves the perfect vision. If we all did that, we would be putting a profession out of business that would be a good thing. The optometrist, or all the other doctors that have to do with vision, ophthalmologists and so forth. If we did our work, we'd put the medical doctors out of business. They would realize that there's something better than medicine that is from drugs. Imagine if all the medical doctors would become Christian Scientists. Just that alone would make a major impact on the health of the world. There are a number of seminaries that have Christian Science as a reference work. They're not quite bold enough to take the step to say that this is the source, but they have it as a reference to help them keep on track in at least some minor way. Who knows? Maybe some of them become Christian Scientists because they read it. I don't know how any thinking person can read Science and Health and not have a life of Christian Science. Fortunately, I have had nothing else in my life. My parents met at a Christian Science, they called them the Concord meetings, It was a social gathering of Christian Scientists, young people. Well, I don't know what age, but they were young. They were, I don't know, in their 20s, I guess, when they met. And they're, both of them had parents, my grandparents, that had been healed. So they both were living Christian Science their whole life. And us four kids, that's all we knew. We were exempted from all of the classes on health in school. All four of us had a perfect attendance every year in school. The school had never had one student that had perfect attendance for all 12 years. And with our family, they had four. The whole family had perfect attendance. I had three sisters. We all four had perfect attendance. Did not miss a day of school for 12 years. Mother and father were always healthy. My dad was involved in a dangerous business. High risk. To my knowledge, he was never involved in an accident. Never injured. Mother had all four of us by having a midwife. There was never a doctor involved. She had us at home. The life of a Christian Scientist, a really Christian Scientist, a real one, is different than the life of anyone that is not. And we all have the opportunity, and there probably isn't anyone walking, unless they're walking on water, that has not had temptations. Because the whole world is out there. Fortunately, I never got taken in by smoking or drinking or drugs. I was never tempted. Well, I will tell you, when I was about 12 years old, a neighbor boy and I went under a bridge and tried out a pack of cigarettes. I think I tried out one because I was so suffocating trying to breathe it, I couldn't stand it. Boy, that cured me. I never wanted to put one in my mouth again. His parents were smokers, and he had access to them, so. Boy, I didn't want to touch that. And I've never been attracted to the other things I mentioned. But there's always temptations out there. I drove fast over the speed limit many times. I raced cars, raced motorcycles, piloted jet airplanes. I always liked speed. Fortunately, I never had an accident. And the number of tickets I had, I could count on one hand. Because I didn't make a fool of myself out in public, driving recklessly or putting other people's lives in danger. But I had some very serious situations. One time when I was driving 120 miles an hour, and this is when 120 was the fastest a car would go, I got on some wet pavement. It hadn't rained in a long time, and it started sprinkling, and the oil on the road made it slick. Went around in a circle 2.5 times, going 120 mile an hour, and it stopped on the side of the road, facing the direction I came in. Not a scratch on the car. I had three other people in the car with me. We were always we're all foolish young kids, 16 or 18 years old. No one was hurt. I've had a flat tire going 105 miles an hour. I remember like it was yesterday. This was wrong to do. Going over the speed limit was not right. It was definitely violating principle. It was violating the law of the land. Mary Baker Eddy says we should obey the law of the land. If you don't like it, then get involved in changing it. But she never encouraged to violate it, so what I did was wrong. Totally wrong. Haven't done it in a long time. But it was wrong. But I was protected, even though I did stupid things. I mean, I didn't put other... Well, in that one case, yeah. The other three young guys, we were at school. We were all in a woodworking shop. And I took it as an elective because I had all my required courses done early. And we all needed to go to town to get some supplies for our projects we were working on. So the teacher approved the four of us to go, and I had a car. And so we all went. Boy, how that could have turned out differently, wow. I was on a motorcycle, and again, I was young, 14, probably 14 years old, because that's when we could get a license. And same thing. It had not rained in a long time, and it was a little bit slick. And my friend and I were riding motorcycles, and we got up to the top of this hill. I'd never been on the street before. And at the top of the hill, it came to a dead end. It was a T. And we slammed on the brakes, both of us, and we went down, and we skidded across the road with cars going both directions. And we went in between the cars. Neither one of us had a scratch on us. We had these crash bars on our motorcycles to protect us if we ever went over. That's the one and only time I ever had an accident with a motorcycle. But we were protected, not a scratch on us. I'm sure this was because my mother was probably doing protective work. I wish I would have asked her when she was still here. I'm sure that was the case. Dad was busy in his business. So I've had some times. I was on a mountain road. I had one of the cars that I bought as a race car, and I was on a mountain road, and I'd just gotten it out of the shop, and they put on new custom wheels for me. And I heard this grinding noise when I went around the curves. And so I stopped, and the lug nuts were all loose. Ha! I could have gone off a cliff. All the lug nuts were loose. They'd put the wheels back on and didn't tighten up the nuts. I mean, this was a racing shop. I mean, they should be doing everything and checking it twice or three times. Have someone else check it to make sure everything is perfect. But anyway, I was protected. I was given the message to stop and check it out. And then I drove very slowly down the mountain to the shop. But yeah, it could have been a very big problem. We are protected on things that we are not even aware of. Things that could have happened never happen. If we're really serious about our spiritual growth. I'm not promoting doing something foolish like I did, although that wasn't really foolish going up the mountain road. I mean, that was In fact, it was such sharp curves, I probably wasn't even exceeding the speed limit. But there were, could have been a very serious problem, if not a totaling of the car. Not to mention what would have happened to me. I was by myself at the time. We have to cultivate how we can give to other people. And I highly recommend, do not give money to an institution unless you know the people and you can trust them. Most of them are corrupt. Clara Barton, she founded the American Red Cross, and they really had a beautiful goal in the beginning. Unfortunately, America is always in a war, but they had a good goal, and that was to help the people that were injured and give them nursing care. But now the Red Cross is totally corrupt. Totally corrupt. There are nonprofit organizations that good people have gone and researched, and they find that, in fact, there's a new department at the government called DOGE. In fact, the wealthiest man in the world is the one that started it, because he wanted to see America clean out the corruption. And that department called DOGE, D-O-G-E, they have uncovered so much corruption and so much waste and so much just lack of intelligence in the way the money is spent. But they were researching nonprofit organizations. You know, we give, the U.S. government gives grants to nonprofit organizations such as the Red Cross. And he was researching it, and he found that in some cases, 0% of what is given as the grant gets to the purpose of what it was for. Zero. None of it. And he said it's very common to have only 3 or 4%. This is all public information. In fact, we have a link from our website to the DOGE where you can see what progress is being taken. Yeah. So I wouldn't give a dime to an organization unless you know the people and you are aware of what it's going to be spent on. We've offered people that wanted to make donations to our institution, the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, that we could put it in a special bank account and you could be a joint signature on it. We have nothing to hide. We're very happy. We want people to know where the money is going. None of us take any salary at all. Almost everyone that's ever been involved is all a volunteer. Never receives anything. But we put our money in to keep the institution going. To pay for the expenses of the programmers, they're not part of the volunteers, they're outside programmers, to keep the website up and running. We have complete changes of pages almost every day. I mean, complete. We don't compare ourselves to anyone else, but you'll find that that's rare. There was a lady that was teaching young girls in high school, training them for track running, the 400 meter. And she taught them to not pay attention to anyone else on the track because they were there to run their race. And what is their race? It's the race of perfection. That's the only thing they were supposed to be concerned about. The race of perfection. Not even look at anyone else on the track. Except the one in front of you so you don't run them down. That's what she taught them. To learn the race of perfection, running perfectly for the time slot that she told them to run it in. There are infinite number of God's ideas that are available. And they're available under every circumstance, no matter where we are or what circumstance we're in. They are omnipresent. Because God is omnipresent. God is qualities. The first chapter of Genesis says, in the beginning. Mary Baker Eddy translates that to mean in the only. And instead of a creation, Genesis 1 is a revelation. When we open our thought, starting with chapter Genesis 1, verse 26, it talks about man. And it says, in fact, this is with every one of the 7 days of creation that are there. It says, and let us make man in our image and likeness, for example. And then it says, then God made us in his image and likeness. So we have to open the door of our thought. Let, L-E-T, we have to let our door of consciousness be open to the fresh ideas of the ideas of God. Then we can be reflecting God's qualities. Not before. Then we can do it. Once we open our door of consciousness, are we going to do it? It's an individual decision. I can't work out your salvation. You can't work out my salvation. And everybody is working on a different part of their salvation at a different pace in a different way. We have a button in our header. A header means it's on every page of the website with our website. A lot of websites have different headers for different pages you're on, but we have the same one. So no matter where you are, you can get access to the most what we think are the most important links. And there's a button that says heal everything. And we give the specific steps that you need to take in order to heal any problem you have, period. It gives you the complete system and tells you how to do it from beginning to end, every single step. And I'll tell you right now, right at the beginning, it says you have to cultivate a life of giving. Think of the ways you can give. You'll be amazed. You'll keep busy giving. Ha ha. Mary Baker Eddy says, don't worry about what other people are thinking. She says, if you do what you're supposed to be doing, you'll be plenty busy taking care of your own thought, speech, and actions. Boy, that is true blue. 100% true. People say true blue because the first place ribbon when you're in competition is in blue. It's always, they call it the blue ribbon. Ha ha. Red is second place, and I think yellow is deemed third. Anyway, it doesn't matter. God has no competition, God has no opposition, and we don't either. If we reflect God, we don't either. We only have one thing to focus on, and that is being more perfect now than we were a moment before now. And being more perfect a moment from now than we are right now. Infinite progression is concrete being. Let's be on that path. Let's listen and yield to the ideas of God, which are omnipresent and will solve any and every problem there is anywhere in all existence. And that covers everything, not just planet Earth, all existence. Look up in the sky. All existence is all existence. And that's what we strive to be understanding and being a contributor to. Think of being in a room, as Wentworth Winslow says, and there's a phone in there and a radio that is tuned in to station KOG, Kingdom of God. and it does nothing but announce the qualities of God. And the other is a telephone, and it's ringing its head off, trying to get our attention to pick it up and let it in our door of thought. Don't do it. When you hear that phone ring, say there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in any temptation, because it has no foundation in God. It is a temptation to believe in something other than God, and I'm not going to do it. Frederick L. Rawson, another great genius in Christian Science, he said, we're in life on this planet for one reason, to make other people happy. Read about him. He gave us an encyclopedia of 1,315 different ailments and exactly how to cure them, following what Mary Baker Eddy says. She says you have to find the exact problem, and then you have to know the exact solution. And he gives us 1,315 of them. A wonderful revelation. He was a true genius. He said we should come to the point where we don't have to do anything physically, but everything is done mentally. Mary Baker Eddy gave her 1898 class, which was her final class in the Metaphysical College. Everyone there had to be invited by her personally to attend. And when they completed that class successfully, they were certified with a CSD degree, Doctorate of Christian Science. And she gave them 7 treatments. They're called the Diapason of Heaven, one for each of the 7 synonymous terms. And I'm going to recite one of them to you, which will close out this extemporaneous prayer treatment on the topic of infinite progression is concrete being. The ideas of God are omnipresent. So here is her treatment, a real gift. Since the topic of this treatment is about progress, the word life comes to thought, so I shall recite to you the Diapason of Heaven with a focus on life, by Mary Baker Eddy. Life is holy. We must hallow this word, for it is a sacred name for God. Declare often, there is only one life, and that is God. There is no personal life. My life is God, an infinite, incorporeal, all-encompassing, all-present, all-active, everlasting life. Declare that God, good, is the only life of man and the universe. Life is divine. Divine life is my God, and my God is life. Life is enthroned in my consciousness. This is the Word of God. Declare all the truths about life. Claim this revealed life as yours. All of life is right where you are right now. And I will give you a couple of added words, and that is, the day that Mary Baker Eddy left us in visible form, she had written on her notepad by her bed, God is my life. Amen. It is 25 0615 at 1358. The end.